We are back once again for the 197th installment of the Parish of the Patriots. It's great to be back myself. Hopefully it's great for all of you to be back, members of the congregation, or if you're a new listener, first time tuning in. Hey, you've got 197 shows you can go back and listen to once you discover how awesome this show is. So whatever's brought you here, it is great to be here. If you are a new time listener, we do have a Christian specific segment. You know, the name of the show actually has some meaning. We do have a Christian specific segment. We put that roughly around the halfway mark of the show. We go off into that. So be sure and stick around for that one way or the other. The show is supported by the voluntary financial support of you, the listeners. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. I'm passing the plate around. We only do this one part here of the show, and then we move on. But I'm passing the offering plate around. Put something in it. We're all staring at you to see if you drop anything in, or you just, like a little kid, put some slugs in there and act like you put some. If you would want to be a part of that, it's easy. Go to the bottom of the description page for the show right here on Radio Albion. We got snail mail, so there's no excuse. It's the easiest thing, you know, go analog like that. Got Bitcoin, got Monero, got the email address down there. You can drop your notes. Or if you have a different sort of cryptocurrency, I'm not ashamed. I'll take your shit coins. It doesn't matter. Drop me an email. I can get you an address for that more than likely. Anything helps. It's much appreciated. I'm very poor. So... I didn't take no vow of poverty. It just worked out that way. So, yeah, with that having been said, off to the listener supporter mailbag. And it won't take long because we just got one here. Well, I do have two. The other one's going in the Christian-specific segment. But anyway, Dan, some great shows the past few weeks. Keep it up. It feels weird that it's almost show 200. Almost 4 years since this one started, plus another few years of the old show. This whole situation with Kanye reminds me of the excitement I had for politics back when I first got into it a few years ago when Trump and Brexit were the big news. I'm looking forward to seeing how it all plays out, your brother in Christ. And that's from Michael. And thank you, Michael. It is appreciated. It's always good to hear from you. And yeah, you know, 200. We're barreling towards the big 200. I was just looking at my calendar, like how that's going to work out. It's going to be a little tricky. Get the last show in by the end of the year, just to top off 2020. 2022 is a clown world year, but hey, it's when we hit number 200 for the Parish of the Patriots show. So yeah, no, it is. It's been a fun journey. We're looking forward to keep going. It is a labor of love, I guess you would say. You know, I'm not going to get into it too much because, again, we'll probably get into this discussion when we do have the 200th show. But to think about 200 hours, basically, you're talking about 200 hours of having these discussions. And like you say, that's not even counting the old show from back in the day, which was a completely different from this. But 200 hours of these discussions without... you know, without running out of things to talk about, you know, it's something. You're talking about the Kanye thing. And so we had a discussion about this on last Friday's Day, the Nationalist, Sven Longshanks, and I, we had the discussion talking about yay and whatnot. And as before I was doing the show this morning, I was thinking about this whole thing with Elon Musk and the Twitter. And, you know, I mean, I was just thinking about, is it just me or does this whole thing seem scripted? You know, with Elon and the Twitter, and are you going to get free speech or are you not? This whole thing seems scripted to me. What do I mean by that? Because you got this guy, okay, and he's this supposedly successful billionaire, you know, super billionaire, powerful businessman. And he has so much money. He can spend $44 billion, I think it was, on Twitter, which hasn't ever actually, I don't think, turned a profit, but he still spent $44 billion on Twitter. And, you know, it was like almost a year process or whatever, dragging this out to make this happen. Because you don't spend $44 billion just willy-nilly overnight, you know. And now he has Twitter. And so we're having this big discussion. Are we going to be able to speak now? Are we going to be allowed? We had this whole public spectacle of him going back and forth with Jonathan Greenblatt of the Anti-Defamation League about whether or not he's going to be allowed to allow people say certain things or not. I said on the Friday show when Sven and I were discussing this, you know, we talked briefly about, you know, the whole Twitter thing, and I'm like, this isn't that hard. You know, what needs to happen is there needs to be concrete boundaries, you know, just concrete rules, you know, objective rules that everybody can read, everybody can understand. If you don't follow them, you get kicked off. You know, if you're not going to allow racial slurs, that's fine. Just say, you know, racial slurs aren't allowed. You know, and then everybody can see, because the problem has always been that it's this fluid thing. You know, it's this fluid. Well, yeah, you know, what he said, you know, that technically doesn't violate any rules, but he's getting kicked off anyway. Why? Because we don't like it. You know, that is not that hard. Not that hard. But it all seems scripted, because now he's talking about, you know, it's basically we're seeing this whole we're trying to figure it out thing. He put up a post something about, you know, we're going to screw this up, but we're going to be figuring this out over the... Hold on now. If you go out and you buy a used car, you know, you mean we ain't got no $44 billion. I'm lucky to have $4 some week. But $44 billion, we ain't got that. But say you got to go buy a used car. Now, if you're mechanically inclined, such as myself, you're going to check that thing over. You check it over yourself. If you're not mechanically inclined, you're going to probably hire a mechanic to come check it out. You know, same thing. If you're buying a house, you're going to get somebody. You're going to, a lot of people, well, you know, you're either going to check it out yourself or you're going to hire somebody that knows what they're looking at. They're going to check it out, right? Now, you're going to tell me this guy, this businessman, this billionaire, spent $44 billion on Twitter, and now that he bought it, he has no idea what he's going to do with it. He's got to figure it out, really. He didn't have lawyers hired. He didn't have a committee put together. He didn't have people that were working on this back last, I don't know, April, figuring out, okay, I buy this thing. How are we going to fix it? What's the plan? What's the strategy? How are we going to get past the EU laws? They're threatening that if you violate, if you allow people to say things that we're not allowing, which I still maintain, by the way, that's a bluff. You know, the EU is worried about their own countries being burned to the ground because their citizens are going to be pissed off because there's nothing to keep them warm. So they're just going to start burning cars in the street and they can warm themselves by that. They're going to kick them off Twitter to add some fuel to the fire. But he should have people working on this, shouldn't he? This just seems silly to me. I just find it hard to believe that now he's just figuring it out and we're getting this gaslighting. You're going to get to be able to say what you think, or maybe you're not. I have no plans to go back on there regardless, so they're not gaslighting me. They're not jerking me around. I don't give a shit. But, well, but I'm not saying it's not important. But I find this amazing. Now he's got it and he's acting like, well, I don't know. You know, like if you bought the car and it's like, you know, you show up and you're like, hey, look at this new car. And your neighbor's like, well, that's fine and all. But you know, what's that knocking in the bottom end? I don't know. I'll figure it out at some point. Right now it looks good, though, doesn't it? Come on now. Come on. I was never a QAnon guy, except in the sense that I made fun of it, because it is. It's stupid. But there is one line from the Q, all of the Q nonsense that sticks with me on stuff like this. And that was that line. It was something along the lines of, you're watching a movie. There was just like one time, and it's like, that was what that one line, you're watching a movie, you know, and regardless of whether that was just some more Q gibberish thrown in with all of the rest of mountain of Q gibberish, sometimes in a pile of gibberish, you'll find a nugget of truth. You're watching a movie. This all seems scripted to me. You can't tell me this guy spent $44 billion with no plan. Really. But now we're having this whole public spectacle about, oh, well, what's it going to look like? Are you going to get free speech? Are you going to be able to speak? Are you going to be able to say what you want? I don't know. Jonathan Greenblatt now says you can't. And now the EU is saying you can't. Oh, what are we going to have? I think it's a manufactured drama. I think it's bullshit. The more I think about it, the more I smell bullshit. I just find that hard to believe. You know, you're not going to spend $44 billion and have no plan. Go in there and you got no kind of plan. You should have been just walking in here. Look, somebody merges, somebody buys out any other company, and they walk in there and they've got their team of people, and they go in and tell the current management, get the hell out. I'm bringing my own people in. And they go in and I mean, it's shroom. It was like a seamless thing. They go in there and start doing their thing. Now, say there wouldn't be some bumps in the road, but they go in there. The point is they go in there with a plan. but not on Twitter, supposedly. Instead, we have this thing where, oh, well, maybe you're going to get banned, maybe you're not. You know, Ye's banned again. Why? Well, because apparently Elon says so, I guess. I don't know. We still can't come up. We still can't, because we can't come up with objective rules that say you're not allowed to do this. As long as you stay, don't get inside this box, this list of things you're not allowed to do, you're not getting banned. That's just too complicated. Too complicated. Can we just have some concrete rules? This is what you're allowed, not allowed to say. This is not what you're not allowed to advocate for. It isn't hard. They always act like this crap is so hard. It's a, we got to figure this out. It's so complicated. No, it's not. It's only complicated because of those that don't want us saying things that we're not allowed to say. The truth. In other words, the truth. Not just being ugly. The truth. Because they could ban the ugliness. You know, they could just say, well, you're not allowed to use racial slurs. You know, you're not allowed to call people names. You know, that's not a big deal. You know, no profanity. I don't care. No profanity. Just lay out the rules. But you see, the problem is those things aren't the problem. They act like that. Those things aren't the problem. Those things are the excuse. Because what they're really banning people for is pointing out the elephant in the room. You know, and they don't like it. They don't want you pointing out the elephant in the room. That's not allowed. And there's, let's be honest, because we live in the empire of lies, there's a lot of elephants in the room. You know, the vaccine is not safe and effective. That's my elephant. And it's so silly because it's not like I'm on video. So I should do a video stream sometime. Y'all would die laughing at my silly ass doing a video stream, because I do wave these hand gestures around. Y'all listening to me, you don't know. I'm holding my arm up when I do that and I'm waving it like it's an elephant trunk going, silly, just goofy. Y'all, then again, I probably, good thing I don't, because y'all be like, I ain't never listen to this fool again. He's out of his mind. The vaccine's not safe and effective. That's an elephant in the room. You're not allowed to say that. Joe Biden isn't running anything. Joe Biden barely knows where he is. He probably spends most of his days in the White House sitting in a corner playing with coloring books. I mean, he doesn't know where he's at. Oh, you're not allowed to say that. Hollywood and the media are owned and operated and overwhelmingly controlled by Jews. Oh, that's a herd of elephants. You're not allowed to say that. Truth doesn't matter. Truth doesn't matter. The economy's not going to get better in the near future. Inflation's not transitory. You're not allowed to say any of these things. You know, the masks didn't work. Why did we have to wear them? I could go on and on. Y'all tired of hearing that damn elephant sound. I'll quit doing it. They don't want you speaking the truth. The racial slurs and the supposed anti-Semitism, all the rest of it, those are the excuses. What it is, they don't want you to say the truth. You know, they don't want you saying the truth. I'm not preaching early, but the whole account in the Bible is like that. They drag the apostles, they drag Jesus in front of the government with all these excuses of what you've done wrong. But the fact is, they just don't want you saying the truth. It's the same story playing out again. I ain't preaching early. Y'all got to wait a little bit for that. They don't want you saying the truth. That's it. This is simple. People try to wrap their heads around it. Why? What are the rules? What are the rules going to be? What? It's all scripted. It's like we're watching a movie. It's like they're conditioning it. I think it's like this whole thing right now with Twitter. They're conditioning us to accept the fact that they have the authority to tell us what we're allowed to say. It's not the first time, but I think it is. I think it's part of the conditioning, because nobody's sitting around going, well, this is kind of bullshit. Do we have a right to free speech or do we not? Do we have the right to speak about what we want to speak about, especially in political matters, or do we not? And they are. They're conditioning people to, it's like, well, you do, as long as this group of people says it's okay. As long as screaming liberals say it's okay. As long as the Democrat Party says that it's okay. You got to go through these levels of approval. As long as it's signed off. and all of these different groups say it's okay, then you have some sort of freedom of speech. I'm of mind, I think the whole freedom of speech thing is a hoax. I think we got hoaxed on that. You know, it's like peaceful protesting, you know? Peaceful protesting is a part of the American way. Well, no, it's actually, it was just a part of the American way when the left, as it were, quote unquote, when the left, you know, didn't wield all of the control of power and they didn't want, you know, the government coming in and kicking their shit in. So they bleated about, you know, peaceful protesting. We have to honor peaceful protesting. But you see, now that they control the levers of power, they send the government in to kick your shit in. And you're out here going, and everybody out here going, hey, we're just peacefully protesting. Why is the government coming in here and kicking my shit in? What about my peaceful protest? Well, that doesn't mean anything. That was a hoax. That was a hoax. So that when they didn't have all of that control, the people wouldn't demand that the government go in there and kick their shit in. Free speech. I think free speech was a hoax. I do. I mean, not saying I'm against it. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying, but I think we got hoaxed on it. I think we have to admit we got hoaxed on free speech. I do. I do. I because you think about it. What have we ever gotten out of this whole free speech thing? You know, we told we got free speech and it's so important. It's our American values and who we are and our democracy. But what have we ever, what has it ever actually been? When has it ever really been defended and held, upheld by the government? Well, let's see. Blasphemy. You see, you can't have laws against blasphemy because my free speech. And it's all like this. Pornography. We got pornography. That was our freedom of speech. Somehow when the founders of the U.S. basically said you should be able to speak politically against the government, that means that you should actually have infinity porn. Free speech. This is what free speech is meant. Every bad thing has been justified under things such as free speech. But when you start speaking about the truth, now all of a sudden nobody cares about free speech. Well, obviously you care because you're trying to say the truth. But the same people who 30, 40 years ago were going, oh, my free speech rights, now you got to legalize pornography. Now you got to have, you got to legalize public blasphemy and insulting people. You know, insulting people's beliefs, blasphemy. Now we got to have that. Now that they are in control, now you got to shut the hell up. You can't speak the truth. You don't have any freedom of speech. We had the wool pulled over our eyes. We got tricked. We got told we had freedom of speech, but we didn't have freedom of speech. It was just a charade. It was a charade so they could blaspheme our Lord. It was a charade so they could produce pornography and destroy our societies and destroy people. And that's not an over-the-top statement, by the way. You think about it. Billions of dollars get spent every year producing pornography. Those people ain't doing it for free. So, I'm going to get off on a tangent here. If a woman accepts money from a man and has sex with that man, it's illegal in this country because it's prostitution. But if she accepts money from a man and has sex with a man on camera, it's perfectly legal because it's pornography. Tell me which one you think is more harmful to society as a whole. Yeah. They spend billions of dollars for pornography, but nobody pays for it. You can see infinity pornography on your computer, on your phone. Anybody can see infinity pornography that you just spend 24/7 do staring at nothing but pornography for free. For free. Why? I'm going off into conspiracy theories again. There's nothing there. Of course, because they're benevolent. They spend billions of dollars on pornography just so you can have it for free because, you know, it's just part of, you know, you need that to live or something. You know? But see, you're not allowed to say any of these things. You're not allowed to say any of these things. You're going to be conditioned. You're going to be conditioned. You're not allowed. You got to wait and see what you have permission to say and permission not to say. And of course, they're not going to give us objective rules. They're not going to give us objective rules of, you know, well, okay, here, you're allowed to say this. They have to be fluid because you have to be kept off balance. You have to be kept unsure. What's going to happen next? I got to check with my overlord, see if it's okay. Yeah. They might let you back on Twitter. They want you sitting there, everything you post, scratching your head going, is this allowed? Is this going to get me banned? Is it going to get me kicked off? I don't know. I'm trying to speak the truth, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's too truthful. I got to seek permission. Oh, it's, I don't know. They got everybody conditioned to that. You know, got everybody conditioned to jump here and there. And it's not surprising. You look at what people went through with the whole COVID thing, you know. Oh, COVID thing. Sometimes you'll go on websites and people post up stuff, you know, like pictures from COVID. It seems like ancient history. You know, it was just a couple of years ago. And you get these people, like the pictures of the people that like covered their whole body with a plastic bag just so they can hug grandpa or some shit. What the hell's wrong with people? I didn't do any of that, by the way. Hopefully y'all didn't either. You know, hopefully y'all didn't either. I didn't even do the mask thing. With the exception, because when I go to the cancer hospital, they make you wear the mask and I go along with it because I go in there and, you know, God has blessed me. I've had two cancer surgeries this year. I ain't had no chemotherapy. I ain't doing no chemotherapy. And like, I walk up in there like I'm here to see the oncologist. Okay. And you go wait in the waiting room. You go wait in the waiting room, and there's all these people that weigh like 84 pounds with no hair, and they're wearing like toboggans on their head because they're freezing to death because they only weigh like 80 pounds. Ain't got no hair, ain't got no immune system. You know, I'm not gonna stand there and make an issue over the mask on that. You know, because then people ain't got no immune system. If it makes them feel better, you know, okay. But that's the exception. It's the exception. I never wore the mask to go to the store. Never wore the mask to go in a restaurant. Just went in the store. Just went in the restaurant. Let them give me the stink eye. You know? Just let them give me that stink eye. About, why ain't she wearing a mask? You're trying to kill everybody. I don't care. I remember one time I went into a bank. And they had all these signs on the doors and signs everywhere talking about you got to wear a mask. I didn't wear no damn mask. And they all looked at just looking at me. Anyway, yeah, that was just crazy. People got conditioned to that, though, you know? They just go along with whatever. Wear the mask, you know? Somebody put up a picture of a funeral, and all these people at this funeral, and they're all that arbitrary 6-foot-apart crap, you know, which didn't mean anything. Somebody just pulled that number out of their ass. Probably because it's, you know, 6 foot, 666 or some shit, you know, doing the work of the devil. I don't know. But they had all these people sitting apart, you know? You remember the stories about people dying alone, you know, old people dying alone because their family wasn't allowed to be around them because there's a deadly virus. y'all probably like me. Y'all probably just like me thinking the same thing. You know, you don't want to say too much here, but here we are. We're conditioned. I'm just going to say this. They better be glad that I didn't have nobody, no old people that were dying alone at that time. Because I'm going to tell you, some asshole in a mask coming out going, you're not allowed to come in here. Want to bet. Yeah, I'm just going to say that. I'm just going to say, they better be glad. It's been an incident. They'd had to put me on another list. Yeah, you know, but people go along. The point is, people go along with it. People are conditioned. You know, everybody looks at that and scratches their head. Now, I was just in town the other day, and I seen some people walking around wearing their masks. They still doing it. They still walking around like it's a couple years ago wearing the mask. They didn't want to let it go. They like it. Wear the mask. It's the trendy fashion statement. Just put the mask on. People just go along. They've been conditioned to go along, do what they're told, to not sit there and question it. You know? I mean, really, most of these people, it's like they never even questioned it. And now, like I say, they walk around, some of them still do it, walk around like they're virtue signaling. Look what a good person I am. I'm doing what I'm told. Those are the very same people that if you lived in the old Soviet Union would have been snitching you out, wouldn't they? They would. You could tell. You see from behind the mask, you could see the smugness, the conditioned. Condition. Everybody's conditioned. Nobody sits there and says, well, should I be allowed to talk about these things? Don't I have the God-given right to speak about these things? No. And that's why, like I say, that's why they're never going to give us like actual objective rules that everybody can read, everybody can understand and say, this falls within the rules, this falls outside of the rules, and everybody gets it. They're never going to do that because they want people always looking to their overlords to ask them if this is okay. Do I have permission? Can I say that? Is that allowed? Is that allowed, Massa? Am I allowed to say that, Massa? Yes, that is the message. It's like we're watching a movie. It is. We're watching a movie. This whole thing. Elon going there by Twitter ain't got no plan. What do you mean he ain't got no plan? The man can afford $44 billion. He can afford an army of lawyers to have this all figured out of how they're going to structure this. No. Now we're told he's just figuring it out. We just got to figure it out as we go. Figure it out. Make do on the fly. Of course, it'd be one thing. It'd be one thing if it was just in one country, but it's not, is it? It's across the entirety of the West. You see this constant program of keeping people off balance where they don't know. I saw a story the other day where some guy in Britain. Get out of Britain again. Some guy in Britain. You know, he was reading passages out of the Bible on the street. They're charging him, tried to charge him with a hate crime. Because they said the Bible is antiquated hate speech or some crap, you know. It's a threat to our democracy, our values of who we are. And that may actually be unintentionally a truthful statement on their part. The Bible is. It's like throwing holy water on a vampire. You know, it is a counter to our democracy values of who we are, quote unquote. Maybe a little bit of truth there. But see, they're wanting to keep people off balance. You think, well, I can read the Bible out loud. Can you? Are you sure? Are you sure about that? Perhaps not in Britain you can't. All these other European countries get these crazy, and they always, that's why these laws are always worded vaguely. People say, why did they word it? You know, why is it like this? You know, they pass a hate speech law. Back when they passed these hate speech laws, they told people, this is to keep people from riling up a crowd to go murder somebody. Not that they had this huge history of that happening. They should have been the first tip off, you know? We're going to have hate crime laws because otherwise somebody could whip up a mob and tell the mob you should go murder these people. And then the people go, hey, but then we couldn't come against them. They'd be like, oh, I didn't kill nobody. The horrible accent. I apologize. So we get hate crime laws. You know, nobody stopped to say, well, wait a minute. How often has that actually ever even happened? Why are you passing this sweeping law that's going to affect everybody in the country over something that really doesn't happen? You know, historically speaking, it's just a non-issue. A non-issue. And of course you go, they word it in a way. Yeah. That's why they would love to use terms, you know, incite to violence. You know, they don't say calling for violence. You see, you use this incite word because that way you can keep it vague enough to where you say, well, again, it's all about being subjective, not objective. You know, you can't have like this rule book here. You got to say, well, somebody could look at this and take that as call to violence. You see, somebody could hear you say that. Somebody could hear you say, you know, that these sins in the Bible should be punished by being stoned. See, and they could go out and try to stone somebody. Has that happened? No. But it could, you see, it could. So we have to have these laws. Shut you the hell up. Can't have you speaking any truth. Could be hateful. Could, Yeah. No, it is. It keeps everybody off balance. And they always keep changing it. You know, you're not allowed to say this. You're not allowed to criticize this. You're not allowed. You thought this was okay last week. It's not okay this week. You know? That's why they keep changing the allowed. You know, like over in, once again, I pick on Britain a lot because it's a joke country, and that's not like me digging it like British people. You know, Sven's my bro, man, and you know, I'm not like digging at him, but I don't think he'd probably disagree with me. Maybe he would, but anyway. We can wind up with a debate whether or not Britain is a joke country. It's okay. The U.S. is a joke country. It's just a dangerous joke. But nonetheless, but in Britain, you had this term, BAME. BAME. And that was the government term, you know, black, Asian, minority, ethnic, or some crap like that. And that was the government term. So you think you're safe. You're using the government's own terms. This is the government approved term. And you wake up one day and say, well, you're not allowed to use that term anymore. It's insulting. It's insulting to use that term. Now you're no longer allowed. Now you're no longer allowed to use the term because, you see, it's ever shifting. It's ever changing. Just keep people off balance. They don't know what they're allowed to say. So they're so hung up. They get people so hung up on wondering if they're allowed to say or do or whatever, anything, that they don't do anything. They don't even question, well, wait a minute, why am I even worried about this? Why do I have to sit here? Why am I having to go through this? You know, why am I have to jump through all of these hoops just to try to make a point that's obviously true? Yeah. Germany, I think in Germany, I read a story. I think it was in Germany. I'm remembering this off the top of my head, you know, and like some teacher got in trouble because they were having class and they made the statement that Muslims did 9/11 in the U.S. and they're in trouble for that. Got fired or whatever kind of crap, hate speech, you know. That's the official government line. You know, now I would probably have disagreed with that. Yeah, I mean, there were Muslims, I suppose, involved in that. But I think it was mostly the U.S. government and the Mossad. But you're not allowed to say that either. But apparently now you're not allowed to say the official government explanation for 9/11, which is these Muslims did it. So what are you allowed to say? You see, because it's always changing. They keep you off balance. You don't know. You don't know if you're coming or going. You don't know if you're horseback or foot, because you're always just questioning, what is it today? What am I allowed today? And without even thinking about it, you're just conditioned. You're conditioned to look to your overlords. Am I allowed to say this? And at the end of the day, that's too much work. So you just shut the hell up. And that's what they really want. Just shut up. It's not worth it. It's not worth going through the 18 layers of bureaucracy, whether public or private, to find out whether you're not allowed to say this two sentences worth 20 whatever characters the hell it is worth of statement of truth. It's just not worth it. Jump through all the hoops. They're just going to delete it anyway until you violated a rule that they can't point to, but they say you violated the terms of service. They can't point to you, and you're just going to get an automated response. There's no Twitter is. It operates just like the U.S. government. You don't have any sort of, what do I want to say? You don't have any way to address, you know, to address your concerns. You know, you don't have any sort of back and forth. They ban you, and you're like, what did I get banned for? And they won't tell you. You just get an automated bot response. Well, that's how the government works. You know, they say if you don't like the laws, you don't like the way the government vote different people in. But you're always just presented these pre-screened candidates that all support the same thing. And you go, Dan, your congressperson doesn't give a shit what you had to say. You know, how many billions did you contribute to the campaign? None. Get out of here, deadbeat. I don't work for free. I don't know. The whole thing is an exercise in conditioning people. You know, conditioning people just to, you know, always understand. You just accept it. There's just so many hoops to jump through that nobody stops to say, why am I jumping through hoops at all? Why do I have to ask permission to say the truth? Just conditioned to go along with it. It's the general idea. Just keep you going along. Don't get off the reservation. Don't get off the reservation. Don't be stepping out of line. Be the next one to be made an example of. And everybody's scared. That whole thing, they make examples out of people, and that works, you know. Everybody's scared to death. Scared to death, you know. They don't want to be the one. They don't want to be the nail that sticks up and gets hammered back down. Very, and it works. It works. Most people are scared to death. They're scared to death they're going to get hammered down on. You know, and I guess it's understandable to a point, but it's just the same. I refuse to go through with this charade. Do this little charade and song and dance and pretend like we have some sort of, you know, like we have freedom of speech, like we have freedom of association, or we have freedom of when we don't. I mean, that's just an observable fact. We don't have freedom of speech. You know, but what we do have, it's okay. We may not have freedom of speech. We may not have any of these rights that we thought we had. But don't worry. You know, all is not lost. Because you see, we got something better. We got our democracy value of who we are, which is also, once again, something else that's never defined. It's like their whole thing with the rules-based or the international rules-based order. And Putin pointed out that, you know, no one ever tells us what these rules are. What are the rules? Give us some concrete rules. See, it extends to the geopolitical. It is amazing, isn't it? You got Putin saying the same thing I just said. He's like, these people always are going on about the international rules-based order, but they won't ever tell us what these rules are. Because the rules are whatever they say they are at the time. That's it. That's what the rules are. The rule is what they say it is at the time. And that's how they do us. We're no different. We're like Russia. The rules are whatever they say right now. And it could change tomorrow. You know, if a country can go from being an authoritarian regime that needs to be overthrown to the next week, you know, there are democracy and our value of who we are, and it could just go back and forth, just depending on what the government wants. International rules-based order is the global version. It's the global version. There are no concrete there are no concrete rules. You can't look to the rule book and say, okay, so what you're saying is any country that stays within these objective rules will be fine. You know, they can't be sanctioned. They can't have any of this stuff. No, there are no. It's all subjective. It's whatever they say it is. It's whatever they say it is at the time. And as a nation, you got to go along with it. And as a people, as a person, as an individual, and it's an individual person, I get it spit out in a minute. As an individual person, you too have to go on with it. They really do want to rule the world. They really do want to rule over all of us. And not just on the surface. They want to rule over your mind. They want to rule over your thoughts, your very thoughts. It is. It's like an extreme mind control or something. We got to get into the Christian specific segment here. We're going to get long. Going to get long if I keep rambling like this, and I could keep rambling. You know that. So, but you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. And this week, we're going to return once again to the listener supporter mailbag. This is from Mr. T. GPD question. I know the Bible does not tell us of Jesus' early life, childhood, etc. Can you speculate? I've always been curious. And again, that's from Mr. T. Appreciate it. And we can speculate. We get a little bit of, I think we get some glimpses. What I've always been curious of, honestly, because, you know, you're not the only one that's been curious, you know, like, why, what about those parts we don't hear about? And what I've always been curious about is the stuff. There's several things specifically that we're not told that I've been curious about. One, you know, all of the different stuff like he talked about with the disciples that didn't get written down. I mean, we're told what we need to know. But I mean, you know, you ever sit around and think, yeah, I mean, these guys spent years together, you know, and they spent all of this time, and a lot of times they'd go up, you know, and go off by themselves. And Jesus would personally, you know, teach them and talk with them. You know, I mean, just wonder, you know, what those conversations were like. The other thing I've always wondered is, you know, in the story where they drag the woman in and say that she's, you know, caught in the act of adultery, you know, and trying to tempt Jesus that way. And, you know, there's the one part where it says, you know, he basically ignores him and he starts writing something on the ground. I've always wondered, what was he writing? You know, what was he writing? You know, maybe it was something funny, like, you know, these dudes lol or something. I don't know, but I've always wondered what he was writing on the ground. But anyway, that's a little stuff. But now to get to the question about, you know, some fun speculation about Jesus' childhood and early life. And like I say, I do, it doesn't give us a whole lot on it, but we do get some glimpses here and there. If we look in Luke chapter 2, verses 40 through 52, it tells us, "And the child grew and waxed strong in spirit, filled with wisdom. The grace of God was upon him. Now his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover, and when he was 12 years old, they went up to Jerusalem after the custom of the feast. And when they had fulfilled the days, as they returned, the child Jesus tarried behind in Jerusalem, and Joseph and his mother knew not of it. But they, supposing him to have been in the company, went a day's journey, and they sought him among their kinfolk and acquaintance." So I will stop there for a minute, and we'll finish it out here in a second. You know, because when they went up, they traveled in a group, like everybody went. So they weren't just like two or three people. I would imagine this was probably for safety's sake and whatnot. But just because also at this time of the year, you know, everybody, you know, from where they were from, everybody went as a group because they were all going to the same thing, you know, to celebrate the Passover. So, you know, they were going in a group. So it wasn't necessarily odd that they didn't know where Jesus was. They just assumed he was with their, you know, he was off with his cousins or kinfolks or with other acquaintances. Well, of course, then they find out that he wasn't. And when they found him not, they turned back again to Jerusalem, seeking him. And it came to pass that after 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the doctors, both hearing them and asking them questions. 3 days. 3 days he was missing. This is a little, just one of those little Easter eggs, if you would, little Easter eggs of prophecy that are, you know, that are given to us early on. I mean, we know the whole story. We've been through the whole story through the Gospels, you know, many times. But it's just amazing that as you go back through here and you see these little things, there's always this, symmetry to these things, you know, with the Lord, you know, as far as like showing how these things come about and this reflection. His parents are looking for him. They don't know if he's alive or dead. Where could he be? And they're looking. He was missing for what? 3 days. And after the crucifixion, you know, disappears from the tomb. Where's he at? He's gone for 3 days before he's raised from the dead. It's just, I don't know. It's just one of those, like I say, you see the symmetry in the Bible, you know, and you look and you see things that are reflected and you're like, well, that's reflective of what is going to come later in the story. Or this is reflective of what we read earlier somewhere else, even in, you know, Old Testament versus New Testament. But anyway, I didn't mean to get hung up on that one part, but I just think that's amazing because they're looking around, you know, their parents, you know, and they're like, where's he at? Oh my gosh, what's happened to him? He's been gone for 3 days. 3 days. Is he dead or alive? That would be the question they had. Is he dead or alive? Been gone for 3 days. That question would be asked again of him in the future. And all that heard him were astonished at his understanding and answers. So you got this kid. You get this kid and he's sitting there. He's sitting in there having this adult conversation with these scholars. And asking them questions, and they're having this back and forth, and he's obviously holding his own. And everybody's listening to this, they're astonished. They're like, who is this kid? And when they saw him, they were amazed, and his mother said unto him, Son, why hast thou dealt with us? Behold, thy father and I have sought thee sorrowing. And he said unto them, how is it that ye sought me? Wist ye not that I must be about my father's business? And they understood not, the saying which he spake unto them. And he went down with them and came to Nazareth, and he was subject unto them. But his mother kept all these sayings in her heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. So they do find him, obviously. And of course, understandably, the parents are upset. You know, it's like, where have you been? You know, we didn't know if you were dead or alive. You know, we were looking all over for you. And Jesus' response is, how can you say you're looking all over for me? I mean, you have to have known I'd be about my father's business. I mean, what else would I be doing? So if you're looking for Jesus, you got to look in the right place. He's out there. He's doing his father's business. even to this day. And you know, obviously, as with our fellowship with Christ, we too were going about the Father's business, our Father's business. You know, and it just, again, people will say, well, you know, I've been looking for Jesus. I ain't never found him. Jesus, well, you're not looking in the right place. That's what he told his mama. You weren't looking. How can you say you were even looking for me? This should have been the first place you come about. Of course, I'm going to be about my Father's business. What else would I be doing? I'm not off playing. I'm not off slacking off. I'm not off doing willy-nilly things, trivial things, frivolous things. I'm out here doing my Father's business. How can you say you were even looking for me? People say, I can't find no Jesus. I don't know what about Jesus. What are you talking about? Well, you're not looking in the right place. He's not just everywhere. He's not just here, there, doing whatnot. He's going about his Father's business. You got to look in the right place. You got to look in the right place if you're going to... Gonna find Jesus. We're gonna do let's jump over here to John chapter 2 verses 1-4. Now Jesus has grown up at this point, but I think we can tie this together. I wanted to put several of these together. Now Jesus, well, let's just go ahead here. Chapter 2, and the third day and the third day there was a marriage in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. And both Jesus was called and his disciples to the marriage. And when they wanted wine, the mother of Jesus said unto him, they have no wine. Do something about it. Basically, Jesus saith unto her, woman, what have I to do with thee? Mine hour is not yet come. Now, sometimes we feel like we're just, you know, I don't know, like we're always looking. I don't know how it is for y'all. It's this way for me. It's like I can see where I want to be. You know, I just kind of have this vague, I guess, vague vision of what I want to. You know, I'm always reaching. As Christians, believers, we're going to do this our whole life. We're always striving for this, what we want to be as believers. And hopefully, the way it's supposed to work is you do progress towards that goal. You know, what God wants you to be isn't necessarily what you think you're going to be. It's not necessarily the end product's not necessarily going to be what you think it's going to be. But we are. We're always striving and looking to grow. And it can be frustrating sometimes because, you know, you feel like, you know, I'm back here in second grade and I want to be a junior in high school, but I'm still stuck back here in second grade. You see, your time hasn't come yet. And sometimes we're growing and we're trying to learn, but our time hasn't come yet. Now here, Jesus' mother's like, you know, they don't have any wine, you know, do something about it. And his response is, it isn't my time yet. I'm not, this ain't the time for me to go around doing miracles yet. You know, he's got his disciples rounded up, but this isn't the time to go public. This isn't the time. My time hasn't come yet. So this kind of tells us, and this relates to the Jesus childhood thing yet. We're not told very much about his early life / childhood because his time hadn't come yet. It wasn't necessarily ready. He was getting ready. He was learning. He was getting ready. Remember, he's still in the body of a man. He's still got to learn. He's still got to get ready. Still got to be prepared. Got to get everything lined up. My time hasn't come yet. Do something. And she winds up telling the servants, just do whatever he says. And he winds up, of course, we know the story. Water turns the water into wine. But I always found this interesting as well. My time hasn't come yet. You see, 3 days. You could throw that 3 days back in there if you want as well. You know, there's a wedding 3 days. My time hasn't come yet. I've got to get everything ready for the miracle. Symmetry. It amazes me. You can jump around and find the symmetry in the Bible. I thought we'd do one last one. Yes, I have more. We're going to do Matthew chapter 12, verses 46 through 50. And I guess the relevance in all of this and all of what I've thrown in here for our Bible reading, because we don't have a whole lot to go on with Jesus' early life and childhood, but all these verses relate to Jesus's relationships with his family, with his mother, and really, you know, with his family and how he related to them. And we say, you know, what was it like for Jesus, but what was it like for them? You know, what was it like for his family to grow up with Jesus Christ as your brother or as your son? What would that have been like? Now, like I say, let's look here in Matthew 12, 46 through 50. While he yet talked to the people, behold, now he's got this big crowd. He's drawn a crowd. He's come in, people are going crazy. He's got this big crowd. While he yet talked to the people, behold, his mother and his brethren stood without, desiring to speak with him. Because they're outside the crowd. You got all these people here, all these people crowding up. You know, he's kind of got his celebrity status going here, as it were. And you got all these people coming. You got people wanting to get sick people healed and cured. And they're wanting to hear what he has to say. And his mother and brother show up. And they're stuck outside of the crowd. And they're trying. They want to talk to him. They want to talk to him. Then one said unto him, behold, thy mother and thy brethren stand without, desiring to speak with you. Your family's outside. Mama done come to get you. But he answered and said unto them, that told him, who's my mother and who are my brethren? And he stretched forth his hand toward his disciples and said, behold, my mother and my brethren, for whosoever shall do the will of my Father, which is in heaven, the same is my brother and sister and mother. You see, if you were going about your Father's business, or we read earlier, where else would I be? His mother said, "Where are you at?" Jesus said, "Where else would I be? You said you were looking for me. Where'd you think I'd be? I'm going about my Father's business." And here we bring it around full circle. And Jesus says, if you're going about my Father's business, then you're my brother. You're my mother. You're my sisters. That's what makes you my brother, my mother, my sisters. You going about my Father's business. Because guess what? You're going to find Jesus because you're in the same place, right? His mother ran around looking for him when he was young and couldn't find him because he was in the temple. He was doing his Father's business. You got to look for him doing the Father's business. You're going to find Jesus, get to doing the Father's business. You're going to find him because that's where he's at. And he says here, who's my brother? Who's my mother? Whenever I remember when I was young and reading that account, and it always came across to me like he was being kind of disrespectful to his family members, you know, to his mama and to his mama and them, you know, it comes off as kind of disrespectful. But, you know, of course, as you mature and older, you realize that, it's, you know, that's not the case. But he's telling you, it's this amazing thing. He's telling us that we're his brother, his mother, his sisters. We're his family. If we're going about the Father's business, we're going to find him. We're going to be in the temple. We're going to be looking for him wherever we're going to be. Wherever it is that he is going about his Father's business, if we're going about our Father's business, then we're going to run into him, right? Because we're all doing the same thing. We're going about the Father's business. That's where you're going to find Jesus. You're going to find Jesus in the nightclub having a good time. That's why the Bible tells us that wisdom is found in the house of mourning, because then you're seeking the Lord, you're seeking God, you're trying to find the Father's business, you're trying to understand the meaning of all of this, and you're going to find Jesus. You're having a party with your friends. I mean, that may be a good time. I'm not even saying you're having a good time with your friends or anything wrong with that. But you're going to find Jesus there sitting around having a good time, having a party. You know, he's going about his Father's business. And that's where you're going to find him. Another thing I find interesting, the reason I included this in here, is, you know, we look here, and in all three of these verses that we read, it relates to Jesus and his mother. And we know early on, I didn't read it because you all know. And we'll probably wind up reading it anyway as we get closer to Christmas. But, you know, we know that, you know, that Mary was told, you know, she had an angel appear and basically told her, this is what is going to happen. You know, you're going to become pregnant with this child, and, you know, these things are going to happen. You know, so she was told in advance. And yet, you know, because it's not like this just dropped on her and she didn't know anything. She was told in advance, you know, you're going to be with child, even though you've never been with a man, you're going to be with child. Well, how can that be? But it just is. You're going to have the Holy Spirit upon you, and you're going to be with child, and you're going to name this child. And on this, you know, on and on. Again, we'll probably wind up actually reading the account when we get closer to Christmas. But she had all this foretelling, and yet she's amazed. Why? Because she's just a person. She's still just a human. Now, this part here, why do you think his mama grabbed his brothers and said, "We're going to talk to him. We're going to talk to that boy"? In the first verses that we read, he's a child and he wanders off, and she's amazed when they find him. They find him in the temple, and there he is with a group of scholars around him, and they're having this adult back and forth conversation. Everybody's scratching their head going, who is this kid? He's ours. We're the Carpenter family. What? But she's amazed at these things. She puts them away in her heart and thinks about them and ponders them. But she was told in advance this was going to happen, but still, you know, she's still a person. She's still in flesh and blood, and she's still amazed by these things. In the second verses, it came to her to have him do something about these poor people don't have any wine. They're having this wedding, and they're supposed to present wine to their guests, and they don't have any. Do something about this. And this, you know, this appeals to Jesus, you know, able to do miracles. But here in this final part, now he's kind of getting big. He's getting noticed. Why do you think? Do you ever wonder why? What were they there to tell him? You know, where's his mother? Your mother and brothers outside to talk to you. He says, who were my mother and brother? But we're not told why they were there. I can tell you, I can speculate on this. I got a pretty good idea what they were there. I think Mary was like, hearing the word, everybody's Jesus, your boy, you know, Jesus, he's big now. He's going all around. He's healing people. And the Pharisees and scribes aren't real happy about it. I think Mary took up his brother and said, we're going to go get that boy. We're going to bring him home. I believe, and this is, again, we're speculating on this part, but I believe Mary grabbed up his brothers and went to find him to tell him, look, you got to stop. You're going to get in trouble. You know, and now this can kind of seem, you know, we look at this and go, well, she was told ahead of time by the angel and all of this, and she saw him turn the water into wine. Why now is she going and telling him? Because, again, we're speculating, but I think it's a safe speculation. We'll lay that out in a second. Why is she going and telling him to knock it off now? Because he's going to get in trouble. She knew ahead. She saw him turn water into wine. What do you mean now you got to quit? Because she's still his mama. Because that's still her boy. That's still her child. He's going to get in trouble. People were probably telling him, look, you know, these Pharisees ain't playing around. They're gonna take him out if he keeps this up. He's going around telling people stuff that ain't what they want the people hearing. He's making waves. I'm hearing rumors that, you know, the Pharisees and whatnot are they're convening the council to see about shutting him down. You know, I mean, and she takes up and tells her brother, she jumps up and tells Jesus' brother, says, come on, we got to go talk to him. I absolutely believe the reason they were there was to tell him, you got to stop, you come home. And again, sure, she was told by the angel. Sure, she saw him turn water into wine. Sure, she probably heard him say amazing things. She probably saw other miracles. She knew he could turn water into wine. So either she was prompted by the Spirit to ask him to do that at that time, or she had seen him quietly doing miracles that nobody knew about as he was growing up. She knew he could do something such as this. But still, at this moment, she's his mama. She's not Mary, the blessed mother of Jesus, our Savior. She's just Jesus's mama. She doesn't want to see her boy get in trouble. She doesn't want to see her boy in trouble with the authorities. She doesn't want to see her boy get possibly thrown in prison or killed. All of that other stuff, yes, she knows that, and that's all well and good, but she doesn't want her child. Because your kids are your kids no matter how old they are. I mean, yeah, you know, when they're little. You know, it said in our first group, verses that we read, you know, after they went back home, Jesus then was subject to them. He had, you know, he was a child. He had to do what they told him to do. But even when your kids are like 30, they're still your kids, you know? You know, it's like you when your parents get old and you're like middle age and your parents are old and they still like sometimes talk to you and treat you like you're a little kid, you know, because you're always their kid. It was in that moment, she's just worried about her kid. She doesn't want her kid to get in trouble. I love this. We read about these accounts. We read about these people, and they seem far away from us. You know, they seem far away. They heard and saw these amazing things. But this just puts the humanity to them, doesn't it? In that moment, you know, Jesus was just a mama worried about her boy, you know? I mean, all of that aside, she's seen him do miracles. She understands that. And in her heart of hearts, she does understand that. But it's her boy. Imagine how she felt when he was crucified. When we talk about, I don't know, we talk so often about, you know, Jesus was crucified and died for our sins, and 3 days later was raised from the dead. And we talk about this, and that's all well and good. But sometimes I think we talk about it to the point that it trivializes it. You know, we just say it. Jesus died for our sins. I'm washed clean by the blood. But we don't think about what that meant. What did it mean for his mama to stand there and watch him nail him up to a cross? Torture him to death in public. But what did that feel like? And we talk about faith and the disciples' faith. And what about the faith Mary had to have? She had to watch her boy be executed, humiliated in public, drugged through the streets. You know, I mean, of course she's going to show up and say, son, you got to come home. Just be a carpenter. I can't. My heart can't bear this. When they shove the spear in his side to hurry up and get him to die before the sun goes down, because we can't have that cluttering up our festival. What do you think she felt like? These are people. These are real people. They have real feelings. Not just these abstract characters that we read about. You should see this. And once again, for 3 days, where's he at? Even his body, where's he gone to? Looking and searching after the crucifixion. Once again, can't find him. Can't find him. Don't know where he's at. Turns out once again, he was still going about his father's business. 3 days, still going about his father's business. It's an amazing thing. I do. I like these things when you can delve down into them and really attach humanity. You know, I mean, Mary is a mother right here. You know, she's not somebody that people pray to or light candles for or whatnot. She's a mother. And she's worried about her child. I don't know. Like I say, the humanity. What was it like for Jesus to have to see his mother weeping for him as he was going through this? To know he's putting his family through this. You know, those that he grew up around. See his mother weeping and knowing, you know, she was having to witness this. You know, how that must have hurt him. You know, I think sometimes we talk about, you know, Christ crucified for our sins and washed clean the blood and all of that to the point that we don't even think about what that really meant, what that meant to those going through it at the time. Anyway, it's just an amazing thing. And we wound up going quite a bit with this subject. So thank you, Mr. T. It was a good subject matter. Makes life easier for me to, we didn't have to come up with anything else. But anyway, yeah, no, it's good. It's interesting. And I love it whenever we have the chance to really think of these things, you know, from the perspective, from just people being people that were going on at the time and what was happening and how they must have felt and, you know, how these things looked to the people that were witnessing them at the time. So we're going to go ahead. We got to wrap up and get out of here today. And hopefully you enjoyed today's show. Hope you enjoyed all of the discussions we had today. I know I have. Be sure and check out on Fridays. I go on with Sven for the Daily Nationalist. It's always a fun. We try to have a lighthearted discussion. Sometimes it works that way. Sometimes it doesn't, but most of the time it does. So be sure and check that out. And as I say every week, be sure and check us out here next Tuesday for the Parish of the Patriots.